Welcome to the Watch Well podcast, where we view stories through the lens of truth. My name is Parker. I am your host. This is my co-host, Nick. Hi, Nick. How's it going?
It's going well. I'm excited about this one. How are you?
I'm great. I'm super pumped about this. This episode. Sing two.
Yep.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. So Sing Two, I'm just going to jump right into the logistics of it.
Awesome.
But I guess maybe first we should remind everybody that if you're watching on YouTube, please click the subscribe and the notification bell. That's still a thing, right? Still
yep.
Click that.
Yep.
And if you're listening to the audio version, please subscribe on whatever platform it is you're using. We're all over the place. So if that's how you prefer to listen, then please subscribe there as well, so that we can grow the podcast and expand into some other things and potentially do more content than what we do right now. But I wanted to jump right into
and Patreon.
There yeah. You go.
We do have a Patreon page for those that are new, those that are continuing watching. If you want to support us, it just helps pay for the RSS feed and different things like that. And if you do donate on the Patreon page, we do updates on, you know, what we need or where that money's going. So,
mm-hmm.
It just helps us go a little further, reach more people.
Yep. And that's patreon.com/watchwell, right?
Yes, the link
or
will be.
Or you can go to Patreon and search.
Watch Well. I do know that the smaller patron pages they don't pop up very well. So if you want to find our Patreon page, sorry, that's a tongue twister. If you want to find it, I'm going to post the link in the description of the YouTube channel. And if you're listening, go to the Watch Well podcast on YouTube. Click on the description in the link. Click on the link in the description. It'll take you right to the page. It'll be super easy for you. YouTube is pretty easy to navigate. So just go to the this episode on the YouTube page. Click on the description. There'll be a little drop down. Click on the link in there. It'll take you right to our Patreon page if you want to support us.
Awesome. So Sing 2. We did Sing several episodes ago. I can't remember an episode number. But a long time ago, we did the first Sing movie and had some differing thoughts and about that one. We kind of disagree a little bit about that movie, but regardless of that, Sing 2 is rated PG for some rude material and mild peril/violence. And then Plugged In Movie Reviews, which is an extension of Focus on the Family. They review movies. There's all just about every movie you can think of is reviewed on their website, Plugged In, and they rate this movie with their content cautions light all the way across the board. So kids, teens, adults, just straight up, it's light content. What do you think of that?
I think I disagree. For the first time in a few episodes, actually. I don't know. I have a 2.5-year-old. I don't know if I would let him watch this based off of some of the music content.
Fair enough. Some of the songs.
Just
yeah.
Some of the songs. I remember the one scene where Mr. Moon, they sneak into the little, that building. And he finally sees, oh shoot, what's his name? The wolf.
Crystal,
thank you. He sees Crystal for the first time. Well, that first song is, I believe, a Selena Gomez song. And it's more like romance, love, since, you know.
Yeah.
A little bit
throughout the movie.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is.
It is.
But that
it's
that
just
was
popular songs, right?
Popular,
popular radio
songs.
Songs.
Yeah, popular songs. But that was, I think, a little much for a 2-year-old. Now, one could argue that it would go over his head.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably would, but
yeah,
trying to preserve the innocence as much as possible. I would say
medium maybe for young kids.
For young kids, I would probably say medium.
Yeah.
But I think teens and everything else is fine. They're going to hear it anyway.
Yeah. And I don't think, I might be wrong, but I don't remember anything where the what you see match. I don't think they like, I can't remember anything that you see that would be as suggestive as some of the lyrics. Like the lyric, there's some of the lyrics that are very, that are romantic, that are kind of suggestive if, right, if you listen to them.
Right.
But I don't think anything on screen that you visually see matches that at all.
Maybe.
Can you think of anything?
Not in a sexual or suggestive sense, thematic, maybe. I don't know. Right. But a little bit of violence, I would say, maybe. With the
definitely violence,
violence,
yeah,
for sure. You know, I don't mean, want my 2-year-old
Mr. hanging. Moon gets thrown off of a tower, yeah, almost thrown off of a building.
Yeah, the whole point is, you know, this is definitely, if you're new to the podcast, this is a spoiler zone. We talk about the whole movie unreserved. So if you haven't seen the movie, go watch it, come back. But but later in the movie, Crystal goes to wrongfully kill Moon for something that he does in the film, and you know, you don't want your kid, your 2-year-old, throwing things off of towers. So yeah. Did you like the movie, Nick?
I love it. Yeah, I do. I love it.
It's a pretty entertaining movie. Yeah. It really is. Very entertaining.
I know you, at least last we talked, you, I don't know if you changed your mind at all, but you didn't really like the first scene very much.
I think my position here is that it was pretty hardcore because of the constant liberal bias we get in our entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
After hearing your position on the podcast episode we did on Sing, the first movie, I would say I've kind of softened a little in terms of just the reality of, you know, how men are in real life. And that was your big point, and it kind of sunk in, like, yeah, they're depicting this and I have a problem based off, but if there's no liberal bias in that film, they're depicting it true. Men
yeah,
aren't present. They're usually absent across the board, and
or at least widespread.
From a general right, like if you took a poll, men are not, I mean, the lack of fatherhood in America is rampant. So just across the board. So it's not, not any particular whatever, but we live in a world of sin, and that's what it portrayed, and it didn't sit right with me. And I was, you know, I originally thought that it was that liberal bias from Hollywood that we always get. But after hearing your point of view, I think you're right. I think part of it too is the reason why it didn't sit right is because it's true.
Yeah.
So there's two sides of the coin there. But yeah, the first movie I thought was entertaining. I definitely think the second movie was better.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think the sound design of both movies is flawless.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. Especially in Sing 2, when they finally get to the part where they're actually doing the show.
Yes.
Like, that's just awesome.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. It's incredible.
It's so much fun to watch.
What's your favorite part of the show? Because I know exactly what my favorite... I was, like, dumbfounded. I was like, that's amazing.
So, I don't know. So, my favorite part of the entire movie is in the show. And it's actually... This is going to sound... Might sound stupid. But the strum of the guitar when the porcupine, or hedgehog, whatever she is, Ash walks out on the stage by herself. And she starts singing, and the crowd joins in a cappella. And then you get the guy, Clay Calloway,
yep,
who's actually Bono, by the way. I don't know if you know that.
I knew
me
that
too.
Yeah.
But he strums the guitar.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the single. Okay. Oh, wow. Everyone's going crazy. He's actually walking out on stage. But that strum of the guitar, that first guitar note just gives me chills.
Yeah.
In the movie. So that's the part that sticks out to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought that was really good as well. I thought that was good. I really liked when, all those little, what were those little animals?
I have no idea.
The cleaning crew.
Yeah, the third shift cleaning crew. Their eyes are huge.
Yeah, their eyes are huge. And when they put them in the show and they all turned And they were the backdrop. Awesome. Dude, that was so creative. I thought that was really cool. Great. That was great. Absolutely great.
All of that.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah. And hilarious, so too, when you see it. Like, it's impressive.
I was like, whoa, that's
while
awesome.
While it's being funny, yeah.
I thought it was great. Yeah. So, yeah, good stuff, man. Good stuff. So
whether it was intentional or not, and I know you softened on your stance on it, but did you see any of that, like, insulting men or any, like, degrading of men at all in this movie?
No, not at all.
In the sequel? Yeah.
Not at all. Absolutely not. Not at all.
Other than the villain's a guy, but that's not really an issue. That's just who the villain is.
Yeah, but that I still think that there's realism in that villain. Where it's just, you know, guys are villains. That's
yeah.
I don't think anybody's arguing that at all.
I think it's one of the things I really like about it is it does a really good job of depicting, I think, show business in general.
Yeah.
Like, I think you can watch Sing, and not that I know, I've never been in, like, Hollywood or subject, Chicago or Broadway or anything like that, but it's like, it seems like that's an accurate depiction of the way things go.
I mean, at least what the cutthroat. Yeah. At least what we hear of Hollywood and the music industry. It's not sunshine and rainbows.
Right.
So.
Right. And a lot of times everyone does seem to be at the mercy of some studio executive.
Yeah, which, I guess that leads into bigger discussions of if they're funding it, they should have a say. The question is, are they abusing their say? Because part of being an artist is being creative, and the people aren't there following the publishing company or the record label.
Right.
You know, or the producers, they're there for the actors and the talent and the creativity and the songwriting and the acting and different things like that. They're not there for the people actually creating the physical final copy of whatever it is.
Right.
So are you, you know, doing your own thing and stifling the artist's creativity, or are you giving them free rein to do what the fans want them to do?
Yeah, and there probably has to be some type of balance there, because the executive's job is to make sure it's profitable, that you can make money off of it, that it's a good investment. And yet you're not going to do that by completely stifling the creativity of the people making the content.
Correct.
Like, they have to feel a level of creative freedom to do what they want in order for it to be successful.
Right. That makes sense.
Or good. I mean, maybe they don't care if it's good. Maybe they only care if it's successful.
Right. Right. For sure. Absolutely. Let's see. Are we, what was your least favorite, scene or part of the movie? What would you say your least favorite is?
I don't know if I can think of anything, really. I've probably watched this 40 or 50 times at least. I don't know that I can think of anything off the top of my head anyway. Do you have one in mind?
I don't.
I think it's a solid movie from beginning to end. I can't think of anything that's like, I can't think of any criticism that, I can think of criticism. So I don't know what I'm trying to say. I just can't think of anything that really makes the movie suffer at all. Like, it's just,
well, nothing, there's nothing out of place for sure.
Right.
Every scene had a purpose. Yeah. All the character arcs worked in unison. There wasn't something that went way off into left field.
Yeah. And I could see someone making the complaint, like the Clay Calloway storyline of him getting over his grieving wife. I could see somebody making the complaint that that's kind of cheesy, kind of cliche. But I think they made it work. So I don't.
Yeah, it didn't come off that way to me at all.
Right.
I actually thought it was very believable with the Yeah, I thought I that never never crossed my mind. I could see how someone would say that, but I think that they did it really well.
Yeah, and cliche is okay in kids' movies.
It is.
It's, you can still do it well, and I think they did.
Yeah, and actually, it was pretty countercultural if you really think about it, because anymore, a guy that does that is not looked at as a man anymore. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I have a new favorite part. So I talked about the end of it. Just popped in my head. I don't know how I forgot it, but
okay.
When Miss Crawley is driving the sports car, speeding down the road, singing System of a Down, a song called Chop Suey. That's I really like that part.
Yep.
But then also when she sees Clay Calloway and she starts getting pelted with paintballs.
Yep.
And then every time you see her from that point on, or a lot of times, she'll just like do that sound, pew, pew, pew.
Yeah, yeah,
pew.
Yeah. It's funny.
Like, that's hilarious.
Yeah. I liked it when she had the megaphone and she was on what's that thing called?
Scaffolding or
something.
Yeah,
the scaffolding machine where she's going up and down, and she's like, yes, Mr. Moon. Yeah. She's like saluting, you know, sir, yes, sir. And she did every, you know. Oh, that was funny. I thought that was good. I mean, there as an adult, there are scenes in that movie where you laugh out loud. I mean, there's good humor in the movie, so
yeah,
it's really good.
When they're first trying to sneak into the building to do an audition, when they don't actually have an audition and they're dressed as janitors, that's really funny.
Yeah, and they're mopping the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny. Well, the funny part's when the guys in suits come out of the elevator right after that, and they slip and they go sliding. It's funny. So it's pretty good.
So what about and this is usually earlier than we would get into this stuff, but what about takeaways? Like, so we're obviously all about watching and reviewing these films through the lens of truth. So where would we start with that in your mind?
Well, and this is a theme that, you know, kind of hit me through the first movie and the second movie, where you see the plot of the movie usually comes to a fork in the road where they can either quit or they can, and usually that fork in the road is usually the problem of the film, right? Where things are kind of crashing down. In the first movie, it was, there were actually two, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a while since I've seen it, but there were two. The first one was, I forget the first one, but the second one was when the building fell down.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went to the rubble, mm-hmm. and they still did the show. There were actually two points where they could quit or, you know, give up, and then they could go back and persevere. And then in Sing 2, in the second movie, when the talent rep tells them, you can't, you're not going to make it in this town, which we find out later had a different meaning to her.
Right.
They took it as, we aren't good enough, you know, I'm not enough. And the Bible's very clear on identity, but, and then also in the second movie when they're at the counter and they say no appointments, you can't get in to see Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
But if we turn to Romans chapter 5, verse 3, starting in verse 3, it says, not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character, and character, hope, and hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. So I think that, you know, if you're watching these kids' movies with your children, looking at these movies through the lens of your faith is actually really beneficial, because you can use these as, you know, if you're paying attention with, you know, the Christian worldview and your presuppositions, you can look at these movies and extract these biblical teachings and teach, like, okay, look, they were suffering in this instance, and they had a choice to make. They could either choose, mm-hmm. they could either choose to give up, or that suffering creates the opportunity for perseverance. And if you persevere, then you can have hope and you can take it to that. Like, I know the verse is meaning it more on a macro level, but in this situation, you can persevere through your situation and it will build you up.
Yeah. And you could, the thought that just popped in, came to mind while you were talking about that is you can connect that idea to, Clay Calloway's grieving too.
Yes.
That same choice that you have to make between just giving up and persevering. I think that's present in his story too, how for a long time he had given up.
Yep,
right. So he's this picture of a guy who achieved a ton of success, was extremely famous, but then his grief brought him to a place where he just couldn't do it anymore. And he did give up. And it's like, obviously when we grieve, that's understandable that something like that, you can relate to that, right? You can relate to the losing the will to continue to be successful or the will to continue on in something as a result of grief. But then when he actually agrees to come and be a part of the show and they're on the stage, he's faced with that same choice again of, am I going to put myself out there? Am I going to persevere? Or is this grief that I'm feeling about my wife being gone? She's not coming back. My wife being gone. Is it still going to keep me from this great thing that's in front of me?
Right.
And it's okay from a get kind of moving on in grief, not moving past it or anything like that, but understanding that it's okay to keep going.
Right.
It's okay to keep pushing forward even while you're experiencing that sadness and the grief over loss.
Yeah.
And so he makes that same decision. Am I gonna step out and persevere, or am I gonna fall back and quit?
Right. Yeah, and I think that I think that doing that is a good way to teach your kids. Did you think of anything else, Nick, throughout the movie with the characters?
So just to go along with that, I think one question you could ask your kids if you watch this is just ask them about times they felt like quitting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when did you feel like quitting? Why?
Right.
Is it because it's hard? Is it because someone said something mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
and then you can hash those things out in a way that, you know, a younger person could take something away from it and gain in their spiritual maturity and just, you know, just general maturity so that they can handle problems, you know, in a better light.
Yeah. Cause you want to help your kids, and you don't have to use movies to do this, but you want to help them to not let fear of whatever it might be the thing that drives them away from something really great.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's better than letting them draw their own conclusions about their own identities. You can, mm-hmm. you can walk them through, you know, every kid at some point is told that they're not good at something, you know,
and
that's exactly what happens in this movie. In this film, Moon is told that he'll never make it. And with no context, he takes that personal. And mm-hmm. with the scene, I'm picturing the scene of him laying in bed and, you know, mourning, being sad.
Yeah.
And then what happens? The grandmother comes to him and actually it's a good depiction of tough love.
Yeah.
It really is. It's a great depiction of tough love. You either figure out how to make it work and prove them wrong, or they're right.
Yeah.
Or they're right about you.
Yeah.
And
that's right. That's right after he stands under the hand dryer, right?
Yeah, that's a great part. Yeah, absolutely. Great part. So yeah, I think that those were really good scenes, really good depictions of, you know, I would rather a father figure say that, but Jim Moon's father's died, right? We learned that in the first film. So yep. having that grandmother figure is great. I think especially with everything, you know, in our society, grandmothers are around.
Yeah.
So I think that would relate to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So yeah, man. Did you pull anything else scripturally out of that, or do you want me to keep going?
No, you keep going.
Keep going? Okay.
Yep.
So then the biggest thing that I took from the film was the dynamic. So, and this may be a stretch to people, but watch the movie, see what you think. And then if you disagree, comment on our Facebook page, comment down below on the YouTube channel. Tell us what you got from it, or if you think I'm crazy, if you agree, let me know as well. Start good conversations there. But if you look at it from, you know, if you look at it from a Roman's perspective and you extrapolate the characters themselves, if you look at Crystal as sin, and then you look at the dynamics between his two assistants, that's what stood out to me. So on one hand, you have the first assistant, which I believe her name is Suki.
Mm-hmm.
And we're introduced to her early on in the film.
Right. She's watching the show.
She's the talent scout, right?
Yeah.
And she's the one that initially tells Moon, no, you're not going to make it, right? Yeah. You're not going to make it in this in a bigger town.
It's too cutthroat.
It's
too much for you.
It's too much for you. And at the beginning, you know, they kind of lead you to believe that she's the bad person. Like, you know, mm-hmm. she's mean, she's whatever. Now, I think that the second assistant, and I can't remember when we're first introduced to him, but the second assistant, his name's Jerry. Okay.
When we're first introduced to him, he's calling in the new acts as they come to.
Oh, you're right. That's correct. So they sneak into the building and they open the door and he hears that song. Mm-hmm. And then he sees Crystal, right?
Yeah.
Through the thing, right. Sitting in the front row of the theater. And I think that if you take Crystal and you make him, I guess, the personification, for lack of a better term, of sin, and you look at the dynamics between the two assistants, you have one who later on in the film we find out is doing things for the right reasons. You know, she has been around the industry. She knows the depravity in which the industry is in, and she I took it from a protective stance. You're not going to fit in here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you, like, you have what, you know, your small town is great. It's doing good things. You guys are great here, but in the bigger industry, you have to deal with things that you don't really want to deal with.
Right.
More of a protective stance on keeping them out of, what was the city called? Something Shore, something Red.
Red Shore City.
Red Shore City. And I think that that's, I think that that's a really interesting plot point between the two assistants, because Jerry, on the other hand, is fully bought out to Crystal, just, you know, enslaved to him. And if you look at Romans, let's see, what do I have written down here? Romans, what did I say, Nick? 5?
Yeah, you're going between 5 and 7, I think.
5 and 7. Let's go with 5 chapter 1, which is, therefore, since we have been justified through faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have gained access by faith into this grace in which we now stand, and we boast in hope, glory of God. And then in chapter 7, these two verses, chapter 7, verse 5, for when we were in the realm of the flesh, the sinful passions aroused by the law were at work in us, so that we bore fruit for death. So let's take the first part of that verse. Or I'm sorry, yeah, the first part before we get to verse 6. For when we were in the realm of the flesh, the sinful passions aroused by the law were at work in us. This concept really hit me when I was thinking of Jerry's character, because he's constantly trying to work for Crystal's affirmation or
approval, acknowledgement, yeah,
anything,
for sure.
And he never gets it ever, and he won't ever get it because of who Crystal is. And
right.
if you look at that, it's very similar, and there's a lot of similarities from that to our sinful nature, where we continue to sin towards death, spiritual death.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's really interesting, because the other character, the talent scout, was much more embodied the slave to righteousness that, you know, Paul, the Apostle Paul, writes about, where she's trying to protect the innocence of the small town group. You know, stay where you are. Don't come to this town. It's too cutthroat. And they take that as a you know, you can't do it, instead of a protective thing. Because we find out later in the film, after Crystal, who is you know, the bad guy, tries to kill Moon, we find out that the first, is it Suki again? Right, Nick? Suki? Mm-hmm. Suki.
Assistant, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Suki goes to save Moon after he gets locked in the room.
Yeah.
And I think that these are, you know, obviously it doesn't fit perfect, but I think that that's kind of what I was reading through Romans a little bit after watching the film, and those two kind of ideas were rolling around in my head, where it's like, man, you could either be a slave to righteousness or a slave to sin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the assistants really play that out. And then even more so, Clay Calloway is the hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the savior,
like a picture of,
he's the picture of Jesus, right? Now, not necessarily in his depressive state, but earlier on in the film, when they're trying to find someone to save the show, he's the hope of the show, because
everything rests on his shoulders, and him coming through. Yeah,
it's the whole reason why Crystal wanted to kill Moon, is because he found out through his goons that that Moon lied about being friends with Calloway. And I think that Calloway is the depiction of Christ. So if you put all that together, you can pull out the gospel that we're a slave to sin until we're a new creature, where we put our faith in Jesus Christ, and then we have salvation, and that's the whole thing, you know, slave to righteousness, slave to sin. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think I didn't think of Clay Calloway like that, but you can definitely see some parallels there with the character, and it shows, you know, I would assume, and this is an assumption and it could be wrong, but I would assume that that kind of connection probably wasn't intentional, right? It probably wasn't something that the filmmakers sat down and said, I want this character to represent like this spiritual concept and Jesus. I mean, that's an assumption. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it shows that even if we're not, like, there's something about that, the gospel story arc, that we're so drawn to that we can't help but try to replicate it in other places. So I think it definitely shows, like what you said, the success or failure of the show that they're presenting, it all rests on whether or not Clay Calloway will agree and come through, right? It all rests on whether or not Clay Calloway will show up and be a part of it. And even once Crystal calls the show off, he's getting ready to throw Moon off the building, and, you know, at the last second, you know, he doesn't go off the building, but he throws him in the closet and locks him there. Once Clay Calloway gets there and they decide to go on with the show anyway, if they didn't advertise on that screen that Clay Calloway is back, like Clay Calloway is, this is his first performance in years. If they didn't tell the crowd that Clay Calloway was going to be there, no one would have gone to the show, right? No one would have even gave it a thought, but because Clay Calloway's there, it allows their purpose to be fulfilled. And you could say that about Christ, like in our sin, we're dead, like we're dead creatures, Ephesians, we were dead in the sins and trespasses in which we once walked. We are dead creatures, and we needed a savior to come through and awaken us, to mm-hmm. revive us, to give us life. And that's exactly what Jesus did. And he came into the world and he gives dead things life. And when he does that, he gives us purpose and value and a mission to pursue. And it's only in him that we can actually do that. We can, it's the only in him that we can have that. And we can, it, the only in Christ can we actually fulfill the purpose and the mission that God's given us. So you could draw that parallel there as well with Clay and the show. Like if you look at that as their mission, as their purpose, they can't do it without Clay Calloway coming through for them.
Right. And I can't remember exactly how you worded it, Nick, but it was something along the lines of, as I don't, know if it was intentional that they depicted him as the savior, or that whole dynamic of, you know, the two assistants and Crystal and the Clay Calloway, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm reminded of Romans chapter 2 verse 15, where it says
lots of Romans.
Yeah. Chapter 2, verse 15, they show that the requirements of the law are written on their hearts, their consciences also bearing witness, and their thoughts sometimes accusing them and at other times even defending them. You know, to your point, you know, we're depraved, but we're still image bearers of God. Mm-hmm. And the story of the gospel, the story of God's law and morality is still written within us. So whether it was intentional or not, it's actually, I would say, evidence to the creator that, you know, to the truth of the gospel and to the truth of morality and the law that God wrote. I would say that's evidence that, you know, it's true. You're flipping.
For sure.
Flipping. You're flipping.
Do what?
I said you're flipping.
Flipping, but you can hear those pages.
I can hear the pages.
You can hear those pages flipping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is fun. You can hear the thoughts because the pages start turning.
Yeah, yeah. What I was going to say is it goes right along to go along with that. The Bible also talks about creation groaning and longing for redemption. And I think that's part of the reason why redemption stories are so prominent. And I don't mean that just like you have somebody down on their luck and then they overcome, but stories where there has to be something incredibly evil that's overcome, and somebody has to experience like an awakening, a redemption of some kind. Those stories it's like every story, right? Every story that we tell, you have, whether it's Star Wars or Sing and Sing 2, or, you know, just anything.
Well, yeah,
they follow that pattern.
Right.
Yep. They follow that pattern for a reason. It's because even in our fallen nature, all of creation is longing for redemption. Yeah. So the stories we tell reflect that.
Yeah, and the whole point that a story requires a problem shows mm-hmm. that sin exists.
Yeah, read any book about screenwriting or storytelling, and you have to have an issue. You have to have a problem. You have to have a flawed main character who has to overcome their flaws in some way.
Or other flawed people.
And other flawed people.
That a character has to save or redeem. Or there's all of that going on. So,
right.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right when you say that. Because if sin didn't exist, if Adam and Eve never ate from the tree, there would not ever be a story. There would
or
be
at least not the type of story that we tell now.
Right, because there would never be a problem.
Right.
There would never be anything that needed fixed. So I think that's really interesting. That's cool. Cool point.
But then at the same time, I really like the movie, and obviously because they're creative people, but they have a high view of creativity. Like they really... I think they do a good job of showing the value of creating something, right? So, and I think that's a reflection, again, of us being image bearers. We have a creative God who created the world, created us, created everything in the world, the universe, and we reflect his image by being creative and making things. Like that's evidence of the image of God on his creation. And I think the movie displays how people, long to create things, whether that be a music show, a stage play, a film, a table, you know, whatever it might be, we long to create things, and we long because we know who our creator is. We know that he created us and he's instilled us with that desire.
Yeah, man, that's good stuff. What did you think? Did you have any thoughts on the redeeming or the healing process that they depicted with Callaway and Ash? Because I thought the way that they wrote that was really good.
Yeah, I mean, I did. Yeah. So when Mr. Moon leaves to go back to the show, Ash stays behind and she stays there with Clay. And at the it's kind of an interesting transformation because at the beginning, she's just like a super fan.
Yeah.
Like she's a fangirl, right? She just loves Clay Calloway. And then when she sees him in his like in his grief, in his depressed state, she just stays with him, right? She's just there doing what she can to try to help him.
Yeah. Back, can we go back to Romans?
Yeah.
Because I just thought of this too. In chapter 12, verse 10, it says, "Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourself. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord." I think that that's another verse that fits because she didn't have to stay.
Right.
It was another fork in the road where they could either accept defeat or persevere, and she chose to love him through the grief regardless of his, or at least that's what I took from it. She chose to stay with him regardless of what his final decision was gonna be.
Right.
His healing was anymore. More important. His healing became more important than him performing in the show.
Yeah, it didn't matter anymore what he could do for her.
That scene
or what
where
he could do for them.
Where she just kind of, it was almost like she was like, okay, he needs me.
Yeah.
He needs help.
Yeah.
And she just happened, because she knew so much about him, she knew all of his songs, she was the perfect person for the job.
Yeah.
That's what it came down to. So I thought that they wrote that scene really, really well.
And that shows like the development of friendship too, the development of friendship and in a broader sense, fellowship. It's like you have to, a lot of times we tend to think of people in terms of what they can do for us or what they can provide for us. So like at the beginning, the only reason they're searching out Clay Calloway is because he can provide them with the show they want to put on.
Correct.
But then it transforms into, at least in Ash, it transforms into, you know, I want to be there for him.
Right.
Regardless of what he can provide for me. And that's the difference between a worldly friendship and a worldly relationship versus a godly fellowship. It's a giving of yourself to somebody else rather than wondering what, doing something just for the sake of what you might get in return.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the main thing. Like I love doing these kids movies because, you know, Ronan, my son, is two, and he's going to be growing up quickly. He is growing up quickly, and pointing these out, you know, these, you know, the whole viewing these stories through the lens of our faith, it makes it so much more practical to teach as you get good at it. And you're like, hey, I see that. And then, mm-hmm. you know, you have, you know, that's why it's important to just kind of soak in the scriptures, because if you have them off the top of your head, you can more easily and readily see things, connect the dots, and then be like, hey, how do I communicate that to a 5-year-old so that they understand?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's invaluable. And that's why I love doing the kids movies, because it really helps you do that.
Yeah. Is this only the second kids movie that we've done?
Yeah.
We did Sing and then Sing 2?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So we need people to recommend more
kids movies.
More kids movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need people, if you're interested in this
and
kind of thing.
And if I'm not mistaken, after a week of being uploaded, I think the first Sing was the highest downloaded episode.
Yeah.
I think that's correct. Yeah. So there may be people that like the kids' movies more.
Yeah. We'll see.
But it would be cool to get, like, you know, popcorn and watch the movie with your kid, and then, or actually watch the movie first, listen to the podcast with us, and then watch the movie with your kid.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the right order to do it.
Yeah. And so I did have some, so I made just a list of takeaways, and these aren't necessarily questions to ask or discussion points, but just things that you can have in mind that you might want to ask questions about. And we've touched on some of them already, but so one of them is, fear should not divert you from doing what you're called to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Mr. Moon feels like it is his calling in life to create these shows, right?
Right.
But there's a lot of things that he's terrified. At first he's terrified of not being good enough.
Yeah.
Like he's got those insecurities, and then he's terrified of dying because Mr. Crystal is going to kill him.
Right.
And he has to get out of there as soon as possible. But there's that moment where he's got to decide, you know, this fear is not gonna, I'm not giving into this fear. I'm, like you said at the earlier in the episode, I'm gonna persevere, mm-hmm, and move forward. So that's one of them. Another takeaway is that risk and this is fairly simple, but risk can lead to reward, great reward. And there's very few good things in life that happen without risk.
Right.
And I think that's a good lesson to teach.
Absolutely.
And then another one is just encouraging your kids to have dreams and set goals. Like, yeah, have something that they would like to do, something that they're looking forward to in the future.
Absolutely.
Whatever that might be. I mean, for a 2-year-old, that's going to look a lot different than for a 12-year-old.
Right.
But,
and do some type of monitoring with those goals. Like, are you approaching it? Do we need to reassess? And obviously, to your point, that changes with maturity.
Right.
How deep you can go into that.
Yeah. And then also, like, when your kid says they want this, here's my goal, here's what I want to do, don't just, like, encourage them just for the sake of encouraging them. Be honest about how realistic it is, but then don't be shy about helping them achieve that goal, regardless of how unrealistic it seems.
Well, I think in that thought process, I wouldn't necessarily go right off the gun and say, hey, this is not realistic.
Right.
I would say, this is what we're going to have to do in order to achieve this big, hairy goal.
Right. So
if they're not willing to put in the work, then there's another conversation that you would have.
Then there comes a time when you have to ask them, is this actually something you want? Because the work, this stuff that you're avoiding, goes hand in hand with the goal that you say you want.
Right.
So do you actually want it, or do we need to look somewhere else?
And then make it if they choose that they don't want it anymore.
It's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another one is, isolation makes grief worse.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that one a lot.
When you isolate yourself from others, your grief becomes worse.
Yeah.
And that's really, I think that's a really good, simple lesson for kids.
It is.
Like, when you're sad, don't withdraw from people.
Right. And that's why church communities are so important.
Yeah.
For believers we were made to be in community with each other.
Yep.
So there's a reason for that.
The last one I have goes hand in hand with that. And that's just that fellowship is powerful.
Yeah.
So friendship, fellowship, community with other believers is a very powerful thing.
But I think that, to your point, you have to connect those two things. You have to connect fellowship is powerful to I'm here for other people to serve them.
Yeah.
I'm not here because of what they can give me.
Right.
You have to couple those two. I think that's vitally important.
Yep.
So, I think that was a great movie. I really enjoyed it. I laughed. I thought it was dumb in some areas. I thought it was great in others. But I walked away from the movie thinking, there was not one scene out of place, like I mentioned earlier, and that's what I appreciated.
One thing I just thought of this, and we were kind of wrapping up, but
no, man. So,
Portia, Crystal's daughter. What do you? So she kind of inserts herself into the show, was going to be recast, and then throws this big, huge meltdown and claims to be fired from the show when she actually wasn't fired from the show. She was just going to be put into a different part, right?
Right.
But then turns around and comes and joins the show again in that smaller part.
I do.
What did you think of that?
Yeah, now that you bring that up, I think that would be the only character arc that was misplaced, because it didn't make any sense. There was, at least I don't remember them giving a reason for her to change her mind.
I kind of viewed it as they were showing how Crystal was evil, not just to the people that worked for him, but also to his own daughter, because he calls her, like, I can't remember exactly what the words he used were, but it was like talentless nobody or talentless hack or something like that. When she gets fired, when she says she's fired from the show, he says something like, I can't believe I have a talentless hack for a daughter or something like that. And then it shows, I think her rejoining the show was her breaking out of his abusive control. And that's why the song that she sings is, that's why that's the song that
yeah,
she sings.
I think
the
I think the answer is in the song. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
It's yeah, he was in control and he also enabled.
Mm-hmm.
And she was also spoiled and exactly what you don't want your kids to be. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's more about the song and it's more about dad's money makes me do these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I would agree with that, but I still think that it was they could have if there's any critique in the movie, it's that they could have showed a better resolution to that problem where she is one way, and there could have been something that happened that made her go a different way,
right?
Instead of just being so bipolar about the big overreaction, and then there's, you know, she blew up, big overreaction, lied about what Moon said, and then was his friend and did what he asked. You know, I think that the healing or the reconciliation could have been depicted a little better.
Yeah. So sure.
All right, guys. Well, that's episode 14. We're at 14 episodes already, Nick.
That's crazy.
Isn't that nuts? Again, guys, if you don't mind checking out the Patreon page, we're going to do a better job at keeping that updated. If you have any questions, you know, we could do something on there. If you feel like supporting us, there's that option too. It helps with like equipment and like marketing to get more people to listen to the podcast, different things like that. If you want to share us or share your thoughts with us, check out the comment section on YouTube. Type us comments. We try to do a good job at responding, and then on Facebook as well. Yeah, follow us. You know, if you're listening on YouTube and you want to listen to just like a normal podcast, we're on iTunes, YouTube. Yeah.
And if you enjoy if you enjoy our episodes, please share.
Please share.
Please
share it. It's all free. Subscribing, the notification bells, sharing the podcast, it's all free. Very low barrier. Please do that for us. That actually is probably easier than donating and just as appreciated. So,
mm-hmm.
Cool. We will, Nick, have we decided the next movie yet?
No, I don't think we've talked about it.
I don't think we've talked about
it. So we'll take some recommendations. We'll consider it.
Yeah.
And then we'll put something out there.
Awesome. See you next week.